April the 24th, 2012. I'm Reginald Carter. I'm doing an oral history interview with Thomas Dunn in Asheville, North Carolina. Tom, you graduated from the Duke PA program, but I'm very interested in your life before going to PA school. Could you just give me a brief summary of where you grew up and the kinds of things you did before you came to being in the PA program at Duke?
Well, I grew up in Roxburgh, North Carolina. I was the son of a tobacco farmer and graduated National Honors from high school. Had the grades, but I didn't have the funds to go to school, so my best opportunity, I thought, was to join the Navy. And I was guaranteed a school with the Navy, so I went into the Navy in 1958 and went to Corps School at Great Lakes. And then after finished that, I was spent about 18 months down with the Marines at Camp Lejeune. And then to get out of there, I asked for another school, and they sent me to the neuropsychiatry school in Philadelphia. And after I graduated there as top of the class, they sent me to Portsmouth, New Hampshire to work in the delivery room. That was good utilization of my training. And so after I got out of service, I enjoyed the service. I worked as hard the last day as I did the first day, but there was no advancement opportunities as I could see because all the billets were taken up by the Second World War veterans. And so I got out and I had applied at Chapel Hill. I was going to be a CPA. I'd been accepted. And I went my first day of school to come to find out they hadn't processed the loan application. So I didn't have the funds to go, so I said, well, if I can get my money back, I'll do something differently. So I went to work at Duke in the cath lab after applying there.
So you just went over to Duke and applied for a job, a clinical-oriented job, and
yes,
they hired you in the cath lab?
In the cath lab, right.
Were you the first ex-military corpsman to be hired by Duke at that time?
No. Nelson Myers was already working in the cath lab.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very similar background. He had gone to the cardiovascular lab training program at Bethesda, I think, and he got out of service and went to work at the cath lab.
And what types of things did you do in the cath lab at Duke? And this was in, what, 1960?
1962.
Okay.
We learned to scrub. We learned to operate all the electronics. The Colson densitometers were doing cardiac outputs and the analysis to get the calibrations to determine the studies that we'd done, processing the records.
So was there much patient contact in those days, or was it mostly animal research?
Yeah, it was both.
Okay.
Mostly, in those days, most of the money was devoted to animal research. So we did a lot of animals, pigs, dogs and alligators studies. Mm-hmm. And then we also, in those days, were studying people who had IHSS. It's a type of heart disease that we needed to learn more about. Mm-hmm. And that was the day of the old computer programming where we had punch cards that you mm-hmm. had to enter the data on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd work all day collecting the data, and then at night we'd take work home with us as extra work, get ahead to enter it in and do the planimetry work.
Now, you were in the cardiovascular lab, but there were other ex-medical corpsmen being hired for other units in medicine.
Oh, yeah.
Around too.
Yeah, I forget what it was called, but where John McQuarrie worked.
Dialysis unit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The dialysis unit. And Charlie Mitchell. Those were the main labs mm-hmm. That I recall.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding was that you were on the payroll. Do you remember and recall being called a physician assistant even before the program started, or on the payroll as a physician assistant?
Well, not before I finished school.
Okay.
Dr. Henry McIntosh was the chief cath lab operator then. He and Bob Whalen, Dr. Mm-hmm. Whalen, mm-hmm. and Tommy Thompson, and then we got Jim Marston, Dr. Kong, Dave Kong, who came. And we were allowed to participate in the program. Nelson and I won. If we had free time, both of us could go to class. Mm-hmm. If we didn't, one would go to class, keep notes, and the other one would get those notes that night, and we'd study together.
And that's when the PA program was established. Now, that occurred 65, 3 years after you were employed at Duke. How did you find out about the program, and how did you get into the program?
Well, we were at Duke, and we knew Jim Moe, who was the administrator, mm-hmm. and we talked to him frequently. We knew about the program that was coming to be. And we took a lot of exams, I guess, to demonstrate where the proficiency of those type people would be best suited. Mm-hmm. And there were probably 8 or 10 of us guys part-time that did all of that.
Mm-hmm. So a group went full-time, the Furl and Germino and Silly and
Guthrie. Yeah.
And the rest of you went part-time. So you were really in the first class of
yes.
PAs. You just graduated a year
later.
Right. And there were, what, maybe 6 or 7 of you in that kind of class,
yes.
part-time?
Right, mm-hmm. right.
What was the curriculum like when you went through Duke?
Well, we had the classwork we participated in, and then we had different rotations. One that we did rotation in was in the emergency room. I also rotated in the endocrine clinic, and then also in neurology. And we worked right along with the medical students and the residents who did the training. Mm-hmm. And we participated in the training program that the residents were teaching the medical students.
Mm-hmm. So you just blended right in with that teaching
right
program.
In
Did you encounter any resistance while you were a student from nursing or any other group, or did?
No, not really that I recall. Mm-hmm. But I know that there were some concerns that some of the nurses had towards the PAs. Mm-hmm. And then I think Dr. Andreoli, she was a mm-hmm. nurse. Mm-hmm. She was helpful in teaching. I think she kind of smoothed out a lot of the areas of concern.
Mm-hmm. And as I call Ruby Wilson, who later became the dean, was also heavily involved in, I think, up in the dialysis unit now. So she got to know the medical corpsman quite well,
right.
and was part of that.
Right.
So that helped a lot, I'm sure.
Right.
You're getting ready to graduate in 68, and your jobs were scarce in those days. You were new kind of professional. So what was going through your mind as far as work? And
well, I knew in the cath lab there at Duke, I had known a lot of the fellows that came for training. And Dr. Russell and Dr. Saunders, who were fellows there, they knew me. I worked with them in their research projects. And so when Dr. Russell came to Asheville, that was, you know, the day of Dr. Keller and Dr. Mooney that had already been here and mm-hmm. were beginning to get the program started. Dr. Russell was invited to be the cardiologist. And that was the summer of 71.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me up, offered me a job, and I came to look. I think I came in September and accepted the job in December, came to work January the 10th of 72.
Okay, so between the time you graduated and taking the job with Dr. Russell, did you stay at Duke, or were you out of cycle in graduation? Did you graduate in a different month?
No, we graduated, it seemed like it was in the fall of
Okay.
65, I think.
Or 68.
68, the second class.
Yeah.
And so we graduated in the fall, and I continued to work in the cath lab.
Okay, so you just continued what you've been doing part-time.
Yeah, that time I was director in the cath lab.
Oh, you became director of the cath lab.
After 3 years, I've
But you were then on the payroll as a physician assistant and was recognized as a physician assistant. Once you graduated?
Apparently that was the way it was.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me about coming to a startup practice in Asheville, North Carolina, cardiology, and I guess Max Mooney was the only cardiovascular surgeon and Dr. Russell was the only cardiologist in town about that time.
Dr. Mooney and Keller were the surgeons.
Yeah.
And Dr. Russell was the only cardiologist in the town.
Yeah.
And so it was an exciting time. It was a new period for everybody in town, and we all felt that we had something to offer the patients in the area.
How were you introduced to patients? How do you remember how that went?
Well, Dr. Russell and I would round each morning together, and he would introduce me to the patients. And there were specific needs like treadmills or some type of test, he would introduce the patient. I would be bringing the patient to the cath lab area or the treadmill area for further testing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never had any problem being accepted by the patients or the staff.
What about Mission Hospital and getting the first bylaws written for PAs? Do you remember much about that, or was that basically handled by the physician?
That was basically handled by Dr. Russell.
But then apparently no problems there?
Well, I remember there were one or two times that Dr. Russell had asked me to put in a cut-down line on the patient. And for some reason, he was out that afternoon, and the nurse called for one of the surgeons to come to put the line in. So that was a little disappointing on his part when he found out that we hadn't put the line in our own patient, that the nurse had gone above what he had left instructions for to get it done.
And that was a matter of contention about nurses taking orders from PAs and those things in those days.
Right.
And you just kind of worked that out by talking it out?
I was never a very demanding person. Mm-hmm. I knew what was best for the patient and offered the best. And at times, I don't ever remember having any, real bad arguments with the nurses about the care that the patient was to undergo.
Mm-hmm. How quickly did the practice grow? You started out in 72 by, let's say, in 5 years, where was the practice at that point?
Well, in 72, Dr. Russell and I, we worked together. We shared a cath lab with the radiology department.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was about 2 years before Dr. Saunders, who had planned to come initially, but was drafted into the Army. Mm-hmm. So he joined us in 70. Must have been 73, 74.
Mm-hmm.
And then each year after that, we began to add a physician, I guess, every couple of years or so.
Mm-hmm. So it grew quickly.
It grew fairly quickly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now you're up to, I believe, 12 physician assistants, and how many physicians?
I think Ron said there were 22 physicians.
Wow, that is a lot of growth. Let's go back to those early years and what you were allowed to do and not to do. I know in the early days you couldn't prescribe medications at all.
Right, right.
So how did you handle that?
Well, if there were any prescriptions that needed to be done on rounds that morning, we would earmark the patients that needed prescriptions and we'd get the doctor to write the prescription then.
Mm-hmm. But you were already moving to the point of saying, this is basically what this patient needs. So you could write the order, but you just had to wait for the doctor's signature.
Right, right, right. We could write the order in the chart, but the prescription for discharge would have to be written by the doctor at that time.
So you were in the cath lab, but were you doing a lot of follow-up visits with patients?
I was doing follow-up visits. I was actually doing a lot of the procedures, the Swan-Ganz lines, temporary pacemakers, pericardial synthesis.
Was that a lot of, did that take a lot of work getting the Board of Medical Examiners to sign off on doing a lot of those procedures, a non-physician doing those kinds of things?
When I started, I was told, you know, that PAs, with the trust of their physician supervisor, could do anything that he would allow them to do.
Okay, so the delegate authority, the board, as long as the physician says, I stand responsible, my PA can do this,
That's acceptable.
Right. You don't remember getting your hand slapped or told, no, you can't do that?
Well, we had one nurse that was here from California during the period of time that he had some dislike for most everything. He made a big issue and they reported it to the Board of Medical Examiners. And after a period of time, Dr. Russell, myself, and Bill Lang, we had to go to Raleigh to be before the Board of Medical Examiners.
And how did that go? Did they, after you presented your case, the accepting of that?
Yes, right. I think there were a lot of responsibilities that the doctor had assumed that apparently the Board of Medical Examiner wanted to know how we operated our practice. So there was no issues after that.
Seeing things change over years. Now you've got 40 years to look back on this profession, and I've talked to a lot of pioneering PAs, and when you graduated from Duke, you must have had some sense of a role or what you'd like the role to be. At that time, how did you see the PA role?
Well, I was one of those young, interested people who would like to have been a doctor. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the means or the finances to do that, so I made the most out of my experiences there and learning. And
so the more you could take on and do, the better you liked it.
Huh? And some of the doctors I worked for there were the best in the world. They assisted me with a lot of my life, getting me ahead, and had confidence in what we could do.
So by that you mean they were good teachers and they were good about allowing you to take responsibility when you were capable of doing that. Do you remember the first time you were able to write a prescription under your own name and what that felt like?
I don't recall. Not really.
Or had you been writing prescriptions all along and just not signing, so it was kind of...
Well, I've been writing them, and we get the doctor to sign them, but that was not a big deal.
So once you were able to put your own name on there, it was kind of
simplified the matter a lot.
Yeah,
you didn't have to find the doctor or get someone to sign, for the prescription, so the patient wouldn't be held up. He could get out of the hospital.
Could you imagine having the autonomy that you ended up having by the time you ended your career when you first graduated?
No, not really. It was an opportunity that a lot of people don't have. A new profession and new skills for, kind of unique people.
Mm-hmm.
You had to enjoy your work to really do well at it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at your career, and if you had a few words to describe the positive aspects of it, and you've already mentioned, I think, some of these, but what do you say are the most positive things about a career as a PA, personally, would you?
Well, I think for me, the satisfaction that we did things to help mankind, to help them get well, and it was an opportunity, a lot of people don't have, because we understood the patient from the time they enter the hospital. Sometimes they come in very sick, and when they leave in a healthier manner, that was uplifting to me.
And over 40 years of cardiology and with advances in cardiology, that must be an exciting part about being in this specialty, I assume. Yeah.
Because when I first started, we at Duke, there wasn't anything of coronary arteriography. Mm-hmm. We developed the program there. We would go into the room and we would manufacture under a Bunsen burner and a Stroh technique the different shaped catheters to get to the coronary arteries.
Made your own? Yeah.
Yeah, we made our own.
No stents or anything
of
that?
None of that was available.
Yeah. And radiology technology was not overly advanced?
No, because at the cath labs at Duke, we had three cath labs, and we were separate from the radiologists, so we were all cardiologist area.
Mm-hmm. Now, when new physicians would join the group, how would they introduce to PAs if they hadn't worked with them before?
Well, that was sometimes a concern because some of the patients, some of the physicians who came had no idea or knowledge of what the PAs were capable of doing. And to be honest with you, not bragging, I think some of them were jealous of what my capabilities were.
Well, if you're a new doc and you go with someone who's seasoned, been doing things, it makes you, I'm sure, yeah. But it also must have inspired them to work harder to gain skills.
And I think some of them actually tried to change some of the things we were doing.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the senior partners, they did not want to go backwards.
No,
In educating students, I know that not long after you set up the practice, you began taking students, medical and PA students, I guess.
Yeah, we had residents from Chapel Hill who would come and spend a month with us. Mm-hmm. Also, PA students from different programs, too. And all of the techniques of the cath lab were trained. I did all the training of the residents from Chapel Hill, the art lines, cut downs, Swan's Gantz catheters, pacemakers, all the different approaches, percutaneous, as well as cut down, and IJ, jugular vein access, all of those.
So the residents are coming and they're being taught to do these skilled things by a PA.
PA.
Now, that had to register in their minds something.
Well, I think I had the respect of most people who came. Not bragging, a lot of them knew what my background was, what my capabilities were, and the physicians I worked for, what, you know, they knew that I was capable of doing.
So these young residents, I'm sure you weren't able to follow, but I imagine one of the first things they sought was a PA of their own once they got out of practice, because they had that
experience. Problems with those people.
That's great. Any negatives about being a PA? Anything that you think back and say, gee?
No, not really anything negative. I think if I had my time to go over again, I would have searched harder for the money to become a physician because I think I could have been as good as anyone in the country. But the opportunities weren't there when I was capable. Also, I had one patient, Dr. Sam Walker, who was a general surgeon here in Asheville. When he had his heart surgery, he had aortic valve replacement. I took care of him. I took care of his proton. And he came up to me one day. He said, "Son, you pick the school you want to go to, medical school, and it's yours." And at that time, I was kind of mid-late 30s, and I had been to school most of my life, and I didn't really want to go back. I had a family, too, so that was more than what I could imagine doing again.
But the PA really gave you that opportunity that you wouldn't have had otherwise to be in, to do the things that you were able to do. Looking at the younger generation, and a lot of the reason we do oral histories is to get this information out to the younger generation of PAs coming about. If you had any advice to pass on to a person who has just began their career as a PA, what would that be?
I guess they'll work hard and, you know, earn the respect of your patient and people you work for, mm-hmm. and things will work out.
Mm-hmm. So just stay focused on the job and the people.
Right.
Yeah. Is there anything I've missed? I know this is a short interview, but is there a question I should have asked you or an area that you would like to cover that we haven't covered?
I can't think of any, really. Those were the kind of the highlights, I guess. And the people who gave me the opportunity from Duke, and Dr. Russell and Saunders, and mm-hmm. those guys, I guess we owe a lot of appreciation to.
Yeah, the physicians, we wouldn't be where we're at today right. without the physicians, no
right.
doubt about that.
Right.
And we need to keep that partnership in that
right.
respect.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the interview, and it's just been great being with you and getting some of this ground history that
okay.
we need. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.